This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 9th of October 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 8th of October 2015, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Scaffolding Collapse Sent Traders Fleeing, Crown Prosecution Service in Nurse U-turn, and Marquee Crash Leaves 14 Hurt. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Scaffolding collapse sent traders fleeing. Traders were sent into panic when a 30-foot scaffolding tower collapsed on Winchester High Street. Market traders scrambled to move their cars as the metal structure fell yards from where they were setting up stalls on Sunday morning. Witnesses say three contractors, who were cleaning gutters at clothes shop Monsoon, attempt to move it from one side of the shop to the other without dismantling it. The initial crash was halted by a street sign, which gave other traders time to get out of the way. Just minutes later, the tower crashed down. No one was hurt. However, the incident occurred less than 2 hours before the Harvest Festival at Winchester Cathedral, when the street would have been crowded with people. Busker Robert Berry watched the incident at around 8 a.m. He said, "The two guys, they were just hanging on to it for dear life, and it was just propped against the post. Everyone was shouting and screaming, 'Move your cars!' All the traders had to quickly jump into their cars and get them out of the way. There was another chap trying to keep people from walking under it. It was a right old scene." Jonathan Walker, a market trader from Kingsworthy, said, "I heard a big crashing sound and people shouting. Then I saw it topple. It hit a post on the way down, which broke its fall. If that was not there, it would have landed on some cars nearby. It was very lucky that no one was in the vicinity where it fell. It could have been a lot worse." He added, "It was not fixed to the wall and secured, and I think they should not have moved it without dismantling it." Monsoon didn't comment on the incident, but said they were investigating how it occurred. Winchester City Councillor for St Michael Ward, Ian Tate, said, "The council should launch an investigation. It's a disgrace that it happened, and scaffolding safety is something I have raised so many times. It was lucky that no one was hurt, but if someone was hurt, somebody would have to be held responsible. The health and safety executive have confirmed to the Hampshire Chronicle that they are investigating the incident."
CPS in Nurse U-turn. Prosecutors have dropped a case against a former Winchester prison nurse accused of having sex with a convicted killer whilst he was on remand. Tanya McCarthy was accused of having an inappropriate relationship with Daniel McBride during his trial for the murder of Magella Lynch earlier this year. The Crown Prosecution Service U-turned to abandon the case last week after admitting it was unable to prove the married mother of four, 33, was holding public office at the time. Now Ms. McCarthy's Eastleigh MP, Mims Davies, is demanding answers over the way the case was handled. She said, "While the rest of public bodies are actively seeking best value for taxpayers, the CPS should highly scrutinise how a large amount of public money can be wasted. In the light of these two cases, I will be asking some tough questions." The relationship between McBride and Ms. McCarthy of Ruskin Road, Eastleigh, was alleged to have formed between April the 20th and June the 1st this year. McBride, 43, was jailed for carrying out a horrific, humiliating and sadistic attack on Ms. Lynch with a shampoo bottle. The CPS withdrew the charge against her after they couldn't prove that her work as a healthcare practitioner would be considered a public role and that the prisoner would benefit from the relationship.
Marquee crash leaves 14 hurt. It was supposed to be the glamorous village fundraiser, but celebrations at the NW Hamper Ball in Nether Wallop were cut short as the car smashed into the marquee, injuring 14 people. The terrifying incident happened at Dean Farm, where a white BMW left a trail of destruction. Organisers, the unofficial Nether Wallop's entertainment committee, which raises funds for the benefit of Nether Wallop, refused to talk. Before the chaos unfolded, more than 300 people were enjoying the event that included a firework display. One of the guests said, "It went from the nicest evening to the worst in a split second. We were right over in the furthest corner, so we did not see anything, but there was a commotion and everyone rushed forward to see what was going on. At first we thought it was a fight, and then someone said a car had come into the entrance. Everything was on the floor, tables, cutlery and people. They were screaming and shouting. It was total chaos. There was a lady on the stage trying to keep everyone calm and ask people to leave to allow access for emergency services. We used the tablecloths for the injured, and the emergency services of around 14 ambulances and police cars were there within 10 minutes. Amazing, considering the party was so remote. Another witness, who narrowly avoided being hit as the car ploughed through the entrance, said, "The car reversed and then went forward and all of a sudden it went straight through the tent. It caught the table nearest the entrance way, hitting lots of people on the dance floor, and it took out another five tables." A spokesperson for South Central Ambulance Service said they had received a 99 call at 11:07 p.m. on Saturday night. Officers of the Hampshire Police Roads Policing Unit are leading an investigation into the collision, which happened at around 11:16 p.m. A 66-year-old from Salisbury has been arrested on suspicion of causing serious injury by dangerous driving and driving a motor vehicle with an alcohol level above the limit. He has been bailed to appear at Basingstoke Police Station on November the 6th.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Adams, Joanne Irene Adams, on the 30th of September, aged 88. Bryant, John Bryant, on the 2nd of October, aged 87. Larratt, John Larratt, at home on the 29th of September. Mills, Ken Mills, on the 30th of September, aged 69. Peterson, Josephine, known as Joe Peterson, aged 89, in Winchester County Hospital on the 28th of September. Street, Mary Edith Street, on the 2nd of October in Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 101. Tuke, Doris Irene Tuke, on the 18th of September, aged 92. Wilson, Malcolm Wilson, on the 30th of September, aged 83. And next we have Christian comment.
And this week it is written by Mary Gray, and she entitles it, "When I Needed a Neighbour, Were You There?" Mothers on the road carrying babies, men climbing wire fences, even climbing onto the tops of trains, then, instead of welcome, blocked by barriers, sent back or sent to camps. families boarding overfilled boats, losing little ones in the Mediterranean, terror-stricken faces, a sense of loss and disorientation everywhere. Many forms of exclusion blockages are encountered. Welcome becomes strikingly absent. In some place, resignation sets in as families are forced to accept tents as dwelling places. How often do we hear the despairing stories? At home I was a doctor, a teacher, a dentist. Now everything is lost. And still they come in thousands. My first experience of the refugee crisis was in Paris in the 60s, when I worked in one of the camps of the Abbé Pierre, the famous pioneer of rescuing the homeless in Paris, restoring their worth and a sense of dignity. Many of the people I worked with were Algerian refugees. The priest in charge of this camp, Père Joseph Rezinski, sent young volunteers like myself into the Nissen huts where the families lived, in their absence to clean, but also to acquire realization as to how these people lived. I was shocked by the poverty, but also by the almost complete absence of any possessions. We were asked to write a report to give to Père Joseph, which he signed in memory of a deep suffering. I'm reliving this experience today as the refugee crisis escalates. Where is the church that welcomes the stranger, the commandment enshrined in Jewish and Christian scriptures? In Christianity, probably the most powerful parable is that of the Good Samaritan, who rescued the poor man lying on the road when the powerful and even the priest, the Levite, passed by. Pope Francis has tried to turn this tide of indifference. Recently in America, he ate with the homeless in Washington instead of with the dignitaries. Yesterday we sang in church the hymn, "Let us build a house where love can dwell, and all can safely live, a place where saints and children tell how hearts learn to forgive." Yet in Winchester, there are signs of hope. The city will welcome the number of families the government allows and will pressure for more. Churches are coming together with more initiatives, yes, with many forms of practical help for refugee families, but also looking wider, with plans to help refugees as well as supporting projects in Syria, to help families not to migrate and leave their country. As Patriarch Gregorius III wrote passionately from Damascus, "Dear West, fellow Christians in the West, thank you for your attention to the displaced. But we say to you that the greatest good that you can do for Christians and Muslims alike in the Arab East is to work for peace. Yes, we can become the welcoming church that Jesus dreamed of."
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a crop of letters this week. We'll be reading to you, I think, 13 letters now. And there are also a couple of letters which we've held over until, and they will be read after the appropriate news story to which they relate. It seemed better to, because otherwise the letters would probably be largely out of context. So the first couple of letters refer to cathedral admission charges. Then we go on to a whole series of letters about planning issues. And then there are a few miscellaneous ones after that. So we'll, having warned you in advance, we'll start off with the first letter,
which comes from LK, and its title is "Get Facts Correct. Sir, As a friend of Winchester Cathedral, I was pleased to read Mr. Wing's letter, Chronicle, October the 1st, and I thank him for setting out the true facts about our magnificent cathedral succinctly and accurately. There is only one thing I would add, and that is that Winchester Cathedral is not the only cathedral to charge for admission. There are, in fact, quite a number now. Lincoln, Westminster Abbey, St. Paul's, Exeter, York, to name but a few. Isn't it a pity that some people who insist on putting pen to paper do not carry out the necessary research before they start spouting off? It only serves to make them look ill-informed. That's from L.K. Goringfield, Tegdown, Winchester.
And the second letter on the same subject is written by Judith Oakes. Sir, there have been recent letters regarding the cathedral entry charges. May I suggest that people have a look at the annual report and audited accounts for 2015, both abbreviated and detailed, which should be available on the cathedral website or in paper form from the cathedral office at 9 the Close. These documents give an enormous amount of interesting information about how the cathedral operates. The business or commercial activities, which include the shop, refectory, Christmas market and ice rink, and which are run through a separate limited company, produced a contribution to chapter funds of £374,000. £374,000. Visitor income for the year, despite the ongoing building works, amounted to £600,000, similar to the preceding year. The church commissioners, who hold the central funds of the Church of England, contribute only the salaries and pensions of the three clerical members of chapter. The cathedral, as a charity, does not aim to make a profit, but to run a balanced budget, and therefore to break even each year. In the year to March the 31st, 2015, it achieved a surplus of £15,000, which was a tremendous achievement and similar to the results of the four preceding years. I understand that the Dean and Chapter would like nothing more than to offer free access to anyone who visits, but this is not possible in the current financial climate. If anyone wishes to experience the wonderful music and poetic language of the 17th century Book of Common Prayer, then may I suggest that they attend Evensong on a weekday. The service is usually choral. Details are available on the cathedral website. It's a lovely service at the end of the day, and I know that many visitors appreciate it enormously. And that's written by Judith Oakes of Mead Road, St Cross.
Councillor Stephen Godfrey writes on Your Views Crucial. Sir, recent coverage in the Chronicles of September the 24th may give the impression that public views are not being taken into account in proposals for station approach. I write to correct this impression and outline just a few of the ways in which the public, through five well-attended open meetings and the active involvement of the local neighbourhood group, known as SANG, and other pressure groups, have directly shaped the design brief for the competitive tender. These include additional emphasis on sustainability, increased emphasis on the importance of cyclist and pedestrian flow through the area, addition of the conservation area on the map to emphasise the context, inclusion of specific drafting submitted by the Winchester 2020 group supported by SANG, committing to a high standard of architectural, highway and landscape design. For the Carfax site, seeking to provide a pedestrian and cycle route from Andover Road to Worthy Lane, with improved access and clear signage to the leisure centre and city. Design principles for the public realm and future developments in the area strongly emphasised. Once the procurement of the design team is complete in March 2016, further direct input from the public to shape the development will be sought through the station approach panel and the statutory planning process. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of the Winchester City Council.
Councillor Eileen Berry says, stop the infighting. Sir, it's a well-known fact that I believe in fair play. And having been to a cabinet meeting at the Winchester Guildhall on Wednesday, September the 9th, there was a presentation on the new proposed development at the old cattle market, and unfortunately fair play didn't seem to be very prominent. Now, we all know that those people that spoke love Winchester and district, but we must talk about the city. There were people from the public domain that had their say, and generally I agreed with them, as they were making it very plain they wanted the best development in this area. But it occurred to me that while some were making comments, one particular comment from one particular person said, we have no faith in you and don't trust you. And that was an opinion, and everyone should have an opinion. But actually, on thinking about it, I realise that if you are going to vilify that cabinet, you are actually attacking the whole of the Winchester City Council. Make no mistake, nothing is achieved or can be achieved without officers and members working together. And also it crossed my mind after seeing the line-up within the hall that, of course, politely, it's a very good time to give whoever a good kicking. Campaigns start when elections are in view. There are points to be gained, but I am hoping that sense will prevail and fairness prevail. Why? Because it is too important to use any development as a political football. So can I ask that because it's so important, as indeed Silver Hill Barton Farm is important, it cannot and should not be used against any particular party because we are all in this together. There can be no proportional blame anywhere for the past, politically, and for the good of our city and further developments, we have got to stop this infighting and start working for the good of all the citizens of Winchester City, this beautiful, wonderful city. Yes, get the best, and the best architectural design. And just one thing, presentation and clarification is all important. Maybe a little of that was lacking on the presentation. That's from Councillor Eileen Berry, City Councillor St Barnabas Ward, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
This letter is written by David Selby, and it's headed, Just Rich Pickings. Sir, I would like to see a coherent development plan for Winchester which guides the City Council in approving or otherwise proposals by developers. If there is such a plan, then it should be produced every time a substantial development is proposed so that we humble citizens can try and understand how it fits into the approved plan. At the moment, we have the Silver Hill project, the Barton Farm project, the area around the railway station, which is not yet out for public view or consultation. The Winchester Village is nearing completion, and a new sports complex is being considered to replace the old one. Affordable properties are being promised, as well as council houses. Of the 3,000 or so properties in the above list, how many are likely to go to people in need of accommodation, and how many to erstwhile commuters from London, who will think houses in this area are relatively cheap, while our local public servants struggle to buy or even rent? My reading of Henderson's interpretation of Silver Hill not being financially viable in 2014 was that if affordable housing is mixed in with luxury flats, then they would not get a premium rate for the latter. The Barton Farm development appears to be slowing, waiting for property prices to rise after the current new builds have been sold. And beware the variation which developers can apply for and which does not necessarily have to be advertised, so we could still lose our bus station or affordable housing in Silver Hill without necessarily knowing about it. So what Is the City Council's coherent overall plan for the city, or are they just being led by the nose by developers who see rich pickings and the council dare not oppose them or insist on terms that are more appropriate for this area and beneficial to our council taxpayers? It's written by David Selby, West Hill Road, North South Wanston.
Phil Yates, a frequent writer to the newspaper, entitles his letter, Ideal Town Design. Sir, on a recent visit to the Dorset town of Poole, I arrived by bus from Bournemouth to the bus station, which is situated off the main road. Designed in such a way, with thought for public use, all bays are close together on one side only, no crossing over the road to the other bays. Incorporated in the station is a cafe, information centre, and shops. That is my vision on how the future bus station in Winchester should look like. No need for departmental shops at all. Stagecoach do not operate in this area, which is controlled by other bus companies. A visit to Poole bus station by the city planners would not go amiss. Opposite the bus station is the Poole Arts Centre, which comprises a theatre, cinema, and large concert hall, the home of the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. In Winchester, we have the first two. The refurbished Everyman Cinema is superb, but we lack a purpose-built concert hall. Here is an opportunity to build such a venue within the Silver Hill redevelopment. I don't see it ever happening. Although concerts are held in the cathedral, this is not an ideal venue. Several people I have spoken to over the years have raised this point. By the way, the most frequent bus service in the country is between Bournemouth and Poole, every 4 minutes. I met holidaymakers from Leeds and Sheffield. I soon got back into the Yorkshire dialect. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Councillor Sean Woodward says, fund crossings. Sir, following your articles about the campaign instigated by parents of Weak Primary School about having a school crossing patrol officer, I have now had the opportunity to meet the parents to discuss their concerns following the change in provision from a school crossing patrol officer to a formal crossing. While I understand that having a dedicated school crossing patrol officer was much appreciated by the parents to help them walk their children to school, I am pleased that we have been able to install a new and safe alternative for people to use, a zebra crossing on Stony Lane. There are a range of shops and community facilities in the area, and a permanent safe crossing point which people can use at any time has significant advantages. The County Council follows national guidance and local policy, which recommends circumstances in which school crossing patrol officers should be deployed. Following the addition of the new zebra crossing, Stony Lane no longer meets this. Against a backdrop of significant government funding reductions for local government and the services we provide, there are inevitably difficult choices to be made. Having a school crossing patrol officer on the same site as a zebra crossing is an extra we need to think very carefully about at a time when our budgets and resources are stretched. I have therefore asked for vehicle volume and speed and pedestrian counts to be done so we have up-to-date data to consider, and in the meantime have asked for the crossing and other road markings nearby to be repainted to improve visibility. Looking across the county, there are other schools in Hampshire where there are no controlled crossing points, and it's only fair that we prioritise these with the school crossing patrol officers we have. While the cost of one SCP officer may seem relatively small, Hampshire currently has one of the largest SCP services in the country, with 266 officers costing around £1 million annually, and so the cost of the service is actually quite significant. I think it's important, therefore, to be fair to all Hampshire's council taxpayers and to use the resource we have where it is most needed. That's from Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Hampshire County Council.
Brian Lambert writes, reclassify road. Sir, Malcolm Geary, Letters Chronicle, September the 17th, would like to know what the improvements to the Ladycroft Ford cost. It is unlikely that would ever be made public because the tax-paying public would be appalled that such a large sum could be spent to improve a road used by so few, especially as the westbound carriageway of the A31 between the Ladycroft roundabout and Rodfield Road is disintegrating with potholes where cat's eyes should be. The County Council must have a strange approach to spending priorities. I believe that in the past, Tichborne Parish Council had agreed to the closure of this road to save the county the cost of repairs at the ford. The sensible answer to the danger to pedestrians by traffic is to have the road reclassified as a restricted byway. This way, only motorised vehicles with legitimate business on the road would be permitted. The request to have the road reclassified should be made by Tichborne Parish Council and Alresford Town Council. Written by Brian Lambert, Parkstone Road, Ropley.
Clive Patchell has his letter, Bins in the Way. Sir, I have recently been using the disabled parking bays in Market Lane, Winchester, to enable my former wife, a blue badge holder, to gain easy access to the shops. Now, these bays may be conveniently situated in the town, but that is where the duty of care exercised by the local authority would appear to start and finish. For access along the adjacent footpath in both directions is obstructed by trade waste bins. To add insult to injury, loading bays have now been provided in front of the bins. So where you could step in the road to pass the bins, now, if a vehicle is parked, one is forced into the middle of the road. Twice recently I have seen a wheelchair in such a situation. To date, the local authority have ignored my concerns. The local authority would also appear to be ignoring their responsibilities elsewhere. For in Chesil Street, a garden area is being left to grow wild, with a seat, no doubt provided for the public to rest and admire the plants, being enveloped by that vegetation. This vegetation is also partially obstructing the line of sight for approaching vehicles at the East Hill Junction. As for Petersfield Road, when was it last swept? And vegetation is being allowed to obstruct the road and footpath, including brambles, thorns and nettles. In places, road markings and the curb are being obscured, and where commuter cars are parked, pedestrians are using the road. Clive Patchell, Cathedral View, Winchester.
Death inevitable, writes J. A. Maguire. Sir, 20 miles per hour signs. Prior to the reduced speed limit, the 30 miles per hour limit was more often than not adhered to. Since the 20 mile per hour signs and the police stating that they would not or could not enforce the new limit, the average speed is 40 miles per hour, rising to 50 miles per hour. This has been for bad drivers an open sesame to do what they wish. A fatality is a dead cert. That's from J.A. Maguire, Wavell Way, Stanmore.
Now, this letter is written by A.E. Foote and it's headed, Thanks to NHS. Sir, in these changing times, how often do we have our own health taken for granted and too often view the NHS in the same vein? Recent visits for treatment to the endoscopy suite at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester have, however, reminded me of what truly amazing organisation the NHS is. I was very quickly put at my ease in what could have been a stressful time. The whole team were totally caring, friendly and thoroughly professional. My thanks to all concerned at the unit and to the NHS generally, and may you all long continue providing such a wonderful service. Written by A.E. Foote of Kestrel Close, Bishop's Waltham.
Daphne Dear writes, spare a thought for unlucky swine. Sir, what a pity the piglets supposedly used to commemorate Hampshire Hog Day on Sunday, September the 27th, were made to race in the heat very close to stalls selling pork sausages, which they will no doubt themselves become in the future. Did the spectators who oohed and aahed at these poor creatures, decked out in silly bows, left out in hot sun in two small pens, and encouraged to run for the amusement of a few half-baked, insensitive humans, explain to their children the exact process employed to turn these little pigs, when they are bigger, into chops, pork balls, pork pies and sausages, etc.? Were the children made aware that all the pork products for sale at the market were made from once charming little piglets, who, when they grew fat enough and worth enough, would be slaughtered and probably end up on someone's plate one day? I think not. Daphne Dear, Fair Down Close, Winchester.
This is about Tory junk mail, and it's from Vivian Lee, but not the one who was originally married to Laurence Olivier, we don't think. Sir, I heard vaguely what my subconscious mind was telling me that it was the sound of the letterbox. My eyes glanced at the clock radio and noticed that it was 7:15 a.m. Being the day of the Sabbath, I could not believe that someone or something had woken me up at this ghastly hour, and certainly not on a Sunday. Later, whilst getting my breakfast, I went and picked up and glanced that it was a pamphlet, In Touch, from the Conservatives. Being in a not very happy frame of mind, and without hesitation, I immediately went to the recycling bin and dumped it in bits before slamming down the lid. Perhaps in future, if the government wants me to read something, then they should pick a decent time and day without waking me up from my beauty sleep to which I was not amused. That's from Vivian Lee, St Cross Road, Winchester.
That concludes the letters for the moment, and we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
Well, 200 years ago was October the 9th, 1815. Treaty with France. French papers to the 30th, which were received yesterday, assert that the treaty with the Allies has been signed. The following are said to be the terms. France cedes 6 fortresses, and others are to be kept on depot, until the contribution shall be fully paid. But Strasbourg, Metz and Lille are not in the number. 150,000 men of the Allied forces are to remain in France and to be maintained by them, of which 16,000 is the quota of the English. 800 million of francs are to be paid by the French to the Allied powers.
100 years ago, October the 9th, 1915. POW letter. A Winchester lady has recently received a letter from a relative who has served 20 years in the South African Mounted Rifles and was for 10 months a prisoner of war in the hands of the Germans, giving his experiences while in captivity. The writer, with 200 others, was taken prisoner at the Saint-Fontaine affair on September the 26th, 1914. Writing on August the 28th, he says, "Our orders were to hold the place, and we should have done so for an indefinite period had not our food supplies been captured on the road up to us. We had been there 3 days when we were attacked, and our rations were finished."
50 years ago, October the 9th, 1965, new pool planned. Winchester City Council. A further step towards providing Winchester with an indoor swimming pool was taken by the council when they approved a scheme as a basis for discussion with the Ministry, the County Council and the Winchester Rural District Council. However, not all the members thought the plan to build an 82 feet 6 inch by 42 feet main pool and a 35 feet by 20 feet learner's pool in the North Walls Recreation Ground a suitable scheme for Winchester. Councillor Neat described it as austerity and a minimum facility, while others thought they should think bigger and add proper bathing and sanitary accommodation for sports teams.
And 25 years ago, October the 5th, 1990. No hope for New Town. Hampshire's top planner has told developers that they stand little chance of building a 5,000-home New Town amidst the devastation. Reiterating his determination to keep the county green, Mr. Dudley Keep said, "To speculate that the Hampshire countryside is something we will not tolerate and will resist bitterly." And he warned prospective developers they had a tough battle ahead of them, while reassuring concerned residents that they would have all the help they needed in fighting the plans. Micheldever Parish Council had invited him to discuss the newly launched draft structure plan and explain its relevance to Eagle Star's plans.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by First Person, which this week has been written by George Hayter.
Hampshire Chronicle, in its 243rd year, the editorial comment is headed, "It was good fortune, no one was injured." There may be a temptation to shrug one's shoulders and say, no harm done, when a scaffold tower crashed down on Winchester High Street on Sunday. The Chronicle disagrees. It was only good fortune that someone was not seriously injured or killed. You can see it for yourself on this newspaper's website, www.hampshirechronicle.co.uk. The City Council and the Health and Safety Executive should pursue the cowboys who were too lazy to do their job properly. The video clearly shows someone trying to cut corners. They should be prosecuted and have their operator's license removed. Monsoon should also ensure they never employ such shoddy operators again.
First Person this week is written by George Hayter, and it's called What Modern Devices Lack. I miss knobs, whether I'm trying to turn up the volume on the telly or dim the lights in the lounge. It seems all the knobs in the world are being replaced by keys on a keypad or buttons on a remote control. And you know what's behind the disappearance of knobs? The IT industry. When was the last time you saw a knob on a computer screen? I reckon the famous IBM software lab at Hursley, 5 miles outside Winchester, is in the conspiracy. I bet the MQ communications software, turned out by Hursley's 1,500 staff, takes no account of the good old knob. So I hope one or two of their open-minded top brains will pop into the post office at Hursley to buy a non-digital copy of this paper and, reading this column, be inspired to do what they can do to bring the knob into IBM's way of doing things. What's got me all steamed up about this is my car stereo. Now it's autumn and we're driving more in the dark, I've found myself distracted by the stereo's illuminated display. It was so bright that it dazzled me while driving. It's computerised, like everything else in cars these days. Could I remember the sequence of button prods to summon the stereo brightness menu? No. And I remained floodlit by my own car stereo all the way home. If only there had been a stereo brightness knob. Voice recognition will be the next thing, but that too won't be as good as a knob. Louder, please. I'll be telling the stereo. Blimey, not that much. More than that, though. No, down a bit. It's all so easy with a knob. It's so precise. You just turn it till it's just right. So quick. Everyone knows knobs are best, but we all feel we have to go along with modern buttons and menus. It reminds me of the 1960s, when everyone felt they had to go along with old buildings being knocked down and replaced with horrible, brutalist architecture just because it was modern. I know it's not the wheel, but the knob is still a useful invention, and men in particular enjoy adjusting knobs. The few knobs we're left with these days are often emasculated by having no maximum or minimum stop point when you turn them. They freewheel, so you don't know if it's on max or min. Devastating in the case of a volume control, because when you turn the device on, you don't know if you're going to hear silence or get deafened. There are so many good things about proper knobs, calibrated 1 to 10. So why do consumer electronics shun them? If it's because they're not digital enough, they should do what's necessary to make them digital. To fail will mean that the IT tail continues to wag the consumer dog. Cruelly, it's a self-perpetuating decline. The less designers use knobs, the more expensive they become, because economies of scale reduce. Higher prices will mean even fewer knobs. If poor old knobs get much rarer, they will soon be individually handmade. The anti-knob trend can be reversed. Any fashion can be. I'm calling for a knob comeback. Remember coffee shops boomed in the 1950s, went nowhere in the 1970s, and now they're everywhere. Same with Italian sparkling wine and left-wing Labour politicians. All we need is a trendsetter to lend some glamour. It's no good me recording marvellous knobs of the past. We need a youthful person or organisation to start a new knob craze. Ideal to do this would be a high-tech brand name at the centre of IT worldwide. Someone or something with cutting-edge credentials to unveil new generation state-of-the-art devices covered in knobs. Could you set up a small team to think about this, Hursley? Everyone in IT remembers the Winchester disc. The Winchester knob could be next.
I'm sure that article finds sympathy with quite a lot of our listeners, certainly with people with declining sight, do actually much prefer knobs to turn rather than try and wrestle with these digital displays. Mm. And I speak myself with some sympathy, having to source audio equipment for my blind son. Mm. And it is getting increasingly difficult nowadays to find these things.
Mm. Ah. Right on.
Lighting up times. Today, Friday, the 9th of October, the sun rose at 20 past 7 in the morning and will set at 25 past 6 in the evening. Wednesday of next week, sun rises at 25 past 7 in the morning and sunset at 4 past 6 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now continue with items of general news interest. We'll have this news item, which I mentioned earlier, which will be followed by two letters which refer to it. So off we go with the news item.
Yes, the news item is headed "Wall Comes Down for Cat." He's a 14-year-old cat who enjoys curling up in a ball and going to sleep in his Chalmersford home. And he's faced down his neighbours after they installed a barbed wire fence. Bea Upton and her cat Tigley were upset when the contraption, which also included sharp studs and 3-inch anti-pigeon spikes, was put up on a wall bordering their house in Pantheon Road. For years, Tigley could be seen coming out of an upstairs window before dropping down onto the tiled roof and onto the wall before jumping down to the ground. But after the barbed wire was installed, he became stuck, and neighbours were forced to rescue him, and Bear said it stopped him living a normal life. Well, now the wire and spikes have been pulled down by the neighbour, known only as Valerie. Bear said she had a builder come round and take it down. I'm very surprised. The way it was portrayed was that it was to stop Tigley getting onto the wall. I'm at a loss. The barbed wire being taken down is not a danger anymore, and that's a good thing. But Bea admits that she did not understand what caused the fuss in the first place. As previously reported by the Chronicle, she complained to the RSPCA, but they could not intervene because pet deterrents are not prohibited. She said, "I don't know what she thinks is going to happen." The Chronicle knocked on Valerie's door, but she declined to discuss the issue. The news story was picked up and covered by the national media. Miss Upton was invited onto the Jeremy Kyle show, but her neighbour declined.
And this is a letter following on from that article from Anne Gildersleeve saying, "Leave cats alone. Sir, B. Upton's neighbour should be made to remove the barbed wire on the fence between the properties, as it is clearly dangerous for Tigley the cat, who has already been caught in it once. I cannot understand why the neighbour thinks the cat can damage her car. Tigley may leave some muddy paw marks in wet weather, but these will be washed off next time it rains. My cat often jumps onto my car when it is in the sunshine, but there is never a scratch on it. Some people just don't like cats, but that's no excuse for trying to kill them. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross."
And this second letter is on the same topic, and when I read it, you'll see why at the bottom it simply says, "Name and address supplied. Keep cats away. Sir, it depends largely on whether you are a cat lover or no. Chronicle, October the 1st, barbed wire used to deter elderly cat. I am not, and so support anything a person has to do to keep cats out of his or her garden. The fact that cats roam where they will, doing all sorts of damage, means that unlike most other pets, they are quite unsuitable to be kept in the home. Every other animal keeps to its own house or garden, whereas cats think they have a right to wander where they will. This means that they should only be kept in cages. Some even enter neighbours' houses and are found in the bed. Like many others, I try to encourage wildlife and delight in seeing mice, birds, insects and slow worms in the garden. Yet all these have been attacked by neighbours' cats at some time. The worst time was when, having lunch on the patio, a black cat ran up the path carrying a struggling blackbird in its mouth. Like foxes, cats often kill for the sake of it, not because they're even hungry. Again, it is in their nature, so they should not be kept, as wildlife in this country is drastically reduced each year by cats. Unfortunately, the neighbouring cat lovers would take it amiss if I were to put wires on my fences, so I shall have to put up with moggies invading my garden. But I wish I had the nerve of B. Upton's neighbour." And as I said, this is anonymous.
Historical sex attacks denied. A Winchester man has denied a series of sex attacks against young girl, including attempted rape. David Elkin, 60, is one of three brothers in court over alleged abuse in the city, mostly dating back to the 1970s and the late 1960s. Anthony Elkin, 69, is charged with an act of gross indecency with a child, while Michael Elkin, 62, is accused of sexually assaulting her as an adult in the 2000s. David Elkins of Battery Hill, Stanmore, denied charges regarding his first alleged victim at the opening of the defence at Winchester Crown Court on Tuesday. The court heard she was aged 12 at the start of the alleged abuse. He's also accused of attacks against two other girls, including an attempted rape against a girl aged between 10 and 12 years of age. The alleged victims cannot be named for legal reasons. The defence of Anthony Elkins of St Catherine's Road, Highcliffe, Winchester, and Michael Elkins of Fleming Road, Hairstock, is due to start this week. The three deny all charges. The fourth brother, Stuart Elkins, was due to face trial, but died in August. The trial continues.
TV host to switch on lights. The face of TV sport, Claire Balding, will be bringing some Christmas cheer to a Hampshire town. Claire Balding will turn on Stockbridge Christmas tree lights on Friday, December the 4th. The broadcaster is well known for fronting horse racing coverage on BBC and Channel 4, and this year Stockbridge will be celebrating its historic links with the turf, which go back to 1775. The first racing at Stockbridge took place on Houghton Down, and in the 1830s a new course opened on Danebury Hill. The track's heyday was in the 1860s, when the Prince of Wales, later King Edward VII, was a regular visitor, and one of his horses, Counterpane, famously came last in the Stockbridge Cup before dropping dead. The course closed in 1898 and is now the site of Danebury Vineyard. Claire said, "I'm delighted to have been asked to turn on the Christmas lights in Stockbridge. I have many friends in the area, and as my father has always thought Stockbridge the perfect small town, he is particularly pleased. I look forward to seeing lots of familiar faces and hope as many as people as possible come to enjoy the festivities."
Police crack down with slavery raids. Police raided two premises in Winchester last week as part of a county-wide crackdown on slavery. Officers, with partners from HM Revenue and Customs and UK Borders and Immigration, visited the workplaces in Winchester, three in Southampton and four in Portsmouth, on Thursday. No arrests were made, but immigration issues were referred to the HMRC. None of the premises have been named. Detective Superintendent Dick Pearson, Hampshire Police Lead for Slavery and Human Trafficking, said, "We have been working since 2013 to tackle modern slavery. Last year we had 40 potential slavery offences identified. However, we are well aware that there is a hidden picture we have yet to uncover." The Modern Slavery Partnership, launched by the Police and Crime Commissioner this week, is a key part of this, raising awareness of what modern slavery is and encouraging us all to speak out.
Mike Brown says, "Thanks, and we're so sorry to have let the country down." He was hoping to bring home glory for Hampshire and England, but now rugby star Mike Brown is left apologising for his team's displays after England were knocked out of the Rugby World Cup with defeat to Australia. A 33-13 scoreline sent the host crashing out, and Southampton-born and Peter Simmons College-educated Brown took to Twitter to say, "Sorry for letting the country down." He said, "I'm absolutely gutted for what's happened. We've put so much hard work in, some of us for 4 years, and to go out like this is devastating. We feel we have let the country down, and for that I am sorry. Your support has been incredible and you deserved better from us. We know there will be criticism and we will take it on the chin, but please know to a man we have given everything in preparation and in the games. On the day we were not good enough and we know that and it hurts. We make no excuses and we will take the criticism given to us. All credit to Australia and Wales and I wish them all the best in the remainder of the tournament." Brown made a good start to the tournament after a two-try man-of-the-match performance against Fiji, but England's defeat to Wales a week later meant the Australia match was crucial, and defeat leaves them unable to qualify. He added, "Once again, to all the England rugby supporters, thank you for your unbelievable support to me personally and to the team. The country is now counting the cost of England's exit, with pubs and clubs set to miss out on millions of pounds earned from customers watching England matches, while ITV will hope fans don't switch off after the company shelled out £60 million for broadcast rights for the 2011 and 2015 Rugby World Cups. Brown also thanked his fiancée and friends for their support.
Building saved. A historic Winchester building was saved by firefighters after it almost caught fire. Three fire engines were called to the Chesil Rectory restaurant in Winchester at 4:10 a.m. on Sunday after the fire alarm went off. Two crews from Winchester and one from Eastleigh were called. They forced their way into the 15th century building and cleared the smoke with a hose and a positive pressure ventilation fan. A spokesman for Winchester Fire Station said, "The whole building was full of smoke and we had to gain forceful access to the building. It happened to be an item left on the cooker which was on fire. Thanks to our intervention, we managed to stop it catching fire. It could have been a lot worse if we had not got there sooner. It could have caused a lot more damage than it did. It really shows the importance of smoke alarms and not leaving stuff on cookers, and also having a nearby crew to deal with the incident." The restaurant tweeted, "Due to @Hans_fire quick response to smoke alarm, a potential fire was avoided. No damage. We are open as normal."
Store shuts doors after 9 years. A lingerie shop in Winchester has closed its doors for the final time. Boudoir Blush in Parchment Street has shut after 9 years of trading. Owner Ellie Fisher, who has been at the helm since 2011, said she decided to close the business due to high business rates. Ellie said, "It's the best decision I could have made. It was a really difficult one to come to, but the high business rates make it really difficult. I would like to thank the customers, and I do feel bad about it. I was also expecting my rent to go up, and I decided to not renew the lease." Ellie is looking forward to the future and says she has exciting plans.
12,500 homes plans decision. Council chiefs are putting the final touches to a plan for 12,500 homes in and around Winchester District. Projects at Barton Farm, Silver Hill and Pitt Manor and others form part of the Winchester City Council local plan for the homes across the district by 2031. Major schemes involved include 2,000 homes at Barton Farm, 287 in Silver Hill, 294 at the former police HQ in Romsey Road, and the 200-home Winchester Village at Pitt Manor. In Alresford, people are divided between an alternative plan by the Alresford Professional Group to spread housing around the town and the favourite proposal in the local plan for housing on farmland off Sun Lane. Some residents of the local plan committee held at the Guildhall on Tuesday backed the Sun Lane site, but others expressed concerns over difficult access. One of those behind Sun Lane said, "I think the local plan with the bulk of the development on site will be the best option. The site is available, it gives us the housing we require and open space and, of course, the A31. Alresford resident John Cranfield also praised the scheme and said that welcomed the open space and benefits to biodiversity in the town. Senior Planning Officer Steve Opposit said the alternative plan was not deliverable. He said a lot of comments were received objecting to the local plan and a lot of further studies and assessments have been taken since then. We have looked at the viability and transport officers have given careful thought to the local plan and looking at whether the alternative plan is deliverable. The local plan has to be effective and the alternative plan isn't. And there are difficulties with the alternative strategy. Its employment strategy does not work and there are difficulties with sites on New Farm Road. The local plan was the best and most deliverable plan, and the alternative isn't, despite public support. However, the plan also drew criticism over sites for travellers and gypsies, as it will no longer include proposals for 26 pitches because of a delay in a report to identify sites. Spokesman for the Gypsy Council, Joseph Jones, called the delay a significant failure in policy by the local authority. The council will discuss the local plan at full council in the Guildhall on October the 21st, starting at 7 p.m.
New concerns over proposal. Winchester housing chiefs have addressed fresh concerns over changes to a controversial elderly housing scheme. Extra care housing planned at Chesil Street car park may be tweaked to save money after it went out to tender. The project, which drew fierce criticism when it was given planning permission in February, will provide 52 flats for over 55s, with communal facilities, parking, and a daycare centre. 44 flats will be let at discount rates, with 6 for shared ownership. Another 2 will be sold on the open market to generate cash for the scheme, which Cabinet Housing Committee heard was only marginally viable. Chesil Street resident Nicola Benson raised fears at last Wednesday's meeting that savings would change the scheme. Officers confirm the scheme is already viable and potential changes, largely cosmetic interior changes, were precautions. Andrew Palmer, head of New Homes Delivery, said, "To reassure residents, we do have planning consent for the scheme and the savings we are looking at will have very minimal effect. The scheme is set for final approval by Cabinet on October the 21st.
Council faces more job cuts. More than 400 jobs could be lost at Hampshire County Council in the latest round of cutbacks. In total, more than 450 positions could be axed as part of £98 million worth of cuts over the next 5 years, with care homes at risk and street lights set to be dimmed. The Chronicle reported last year that the service cutbacks were on the way as council leaders say they have lost 51% of their grant from government in recent years. Council leader Roy Perry had warned that as many as 1,000 jobs may be at risk long term, although only 454 are listed in the plans that were approved by the Cabinet on Monday. But as the proposals, which will now go before the full council on October the 22nd, have been labelled as diabolical by opponents of the Conservative administration, who have urged them to dig deeper into £400 million worth of reserves to prevent job losses. The proposals, which could start to come into effect from next year, but will not come into full force until 2017, include £52 million worth of planned cuts in adult social care alone. A report says that reducing residential care could save £50 million by 2018-19 and 163 jobs could be lost overall. Children's services could also undergo major changes, with changes to social care, family support services and education, although the impact on jobs is not clear yet. The Economy, Environment and Transport Department may also see cuts to the highways budget and public bus subsidies, as well as streetlights dimmed. There could also be reductions to contributions towards the Hampshire Cultural Trust, which runs the county's museums, and changes to the county's libraries and trading standards team. The council's government support grants have been cut by more than half since 2010, with £240 million cuts over the last 8 years. A further £100 million is expected to be cut by 2017-18, partly because of a council tax freeze. Council chiefs say the rate freeze is only possible through relentless action to find savings.
Restaurant give raffle fund to charity. A Winchester restaurant has donated £530 for the Trinity Centre. River Cottage Canteen celebrated its first birthday and a raffle raised the sum for Trinity Winchester, which works with the socially excluded. Group head chef Jill Miller hosted the event and featured a four-course menu and live music from the FB Pocket Orchestra. Phil Bendel, general manager, said, "We were delighted with the money raised for Trinity Winchester from our birthday raffle and know that it will be put to a great use. Trinity are an amazing charity and we look forward to continuing our support with them to help fund the amazing work that they do in the local community." Michelle Gardner, Director of Strategy and Fundraising at Trinity, said, "We are extremely grateful for the support of River Cottage Canteen. The canteen also worked with Trinity on the Big Sleep Out in May and are holding a gala dinner event with them on November the 26th.
Freedom Parade for CORE. Another Freedom Parade will be held in Winchester later this month. This time, the Adjutant General's Corps will march on Saturday, October the 24th. It follows the recent one staged by the King's Royal Hussars in July. On October the 24th, around 150 troops and the band and bugles of the Rifles will march through the heart of the city. The right of freedom of entry is an ancient privilege, and it allows a regiment to parade with bayonets fixed, drums beating, and colours flying. The City Council awarded freedom of entry to the former Royal Army Pay Corps in 1970. The Corps was amalgamated when the Adjutant General's Corps was formed, and the honour was transferred to the new Corps in 1996. The parade will be inspected by the Mayor, Councillor Angela Clare, and the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson. Approximate timings are 10 a.m. parade forms at Peninsula Barracks, 10:15 a.m. parade steps off into Romsey Road, continues into Upper High Street, down the pedestrianised area, 10:25 a.m. parade arrives in the Broadway and forms up for inspection, 10:45 a.m. it moves off, marches around the King Alfred statue and back past the Guildhall into Market Street and marches to the Cathedral for a service starting at 11:15 a.m. 12:15 p.m. civic reception for invited guests at the Guildhall.
Our local heroes. They are the pride of Hampshire. Scores of police officers and members of the public have been awarded for, I think it should have been rewarded, for their service. There were tears and laughs as courageous people were given awards at the Chief Constable Awards ceremony. The event was a chance for Hampshire Chief Constable Andy Marsh to reward those who have gone above and beyond their duty to make their community safe, as well as celebrate devoted police officers. Family, friends and colleagues packed the lecture hall at the special training facility in Netley as the Chief Constable was joined by the Lord Lieutenant, Nigel Atkinson, Judge Keith Cutler, the Recorder of Winchester, and the Chairman of the Royal Humane Society, John Grandy, to present the award. The first awards were given to five police officers for 20 years of service and included PC Gwen Morris, DS Elizabeth Brunt, Inspector Mike Haynes, PC John Nash and Inspector Rachel Upfold. The next awards were given by Judge Cutler as part of the Crown Court Certificate of Commendation to PC Vicky Sharp, PSI Jenna Eldridge and DS Richard Selwood. Royal Humane Society awards were given to police officers and members of the public who had helped to save a person's life. Chief Constable Marsh said, "Policing is a vocation, not to make money, but to make a difference and to change the world for the better. This job is about real people, but we have members of the community being recognised for their own extreme bravery as well. All these people have shown such courage, bravery and integrity, and this is my chance to thank them all.
Paying respects. Winchester Cathedral will hold a service to remember loved ones who have passed away and also support a local charity. Residents are invited to attend the remembrance and celebration of people's lives, and those who wished can light a candle in their memory. There's also a chance to make a dedication to the Naomi House and Jack's Place book. The service is in the cathedral on December the 3rd at 7:15 p.m. Those who wish to attend, light a candle or sign the remembrance book should call Naomi House on 01962 760 060. That's 01962 760 060.
Gritters will keep our roads ice-free. They are the vehicles that council chiefs hope will keep Hampshire's economy moving in extreme weather. Hampshire County Council says that their fleet of winter vehicles will be on 24-hour standby 7 days a week from October to April 2016 to deal with winter weather. Now the fleet of 51 gritters have been given special names by primary school children in the county, including Mr. Grit, Rainbow Rocks, and even Mr. Plough, which was made famous in American TV show The Simpsons. The fleet has already been out on the roads to ensure they are ready for action when the weather takes a turn for the worst. As well as this, around 3,700 community salt bins are being filled so people can play their part, keeping smaller roads and pavements clear of snow and ice in bad weather. With some 5,800 miles of road to cover across Hampshire, highways teams will treat them on a priority basis. Priority 1 routes in the county are those which carry the majority of total traffic. These include A roads, some B roads and major bus routes, as well as roads to major emergency services and, of course, areas of high traffic. These routes are routinely treated when the road surface temperature is forecast to plummet below freezing and ice and frost is predicted. It can take up to 3.5 hours to treat one of these routes completely. While priority 2 routes, which include B roads and single access roads to villages, will be treated during prolonged severe weather. To decide when and where to salt a road, the teams use a special dedicated weather forecast and their own ice alert system. Hampshire County Council's executive member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Councillor Sean Woodward, said, "This year's fleet is more impressive than ever, with a higher proportion of advanced dedicated spreaders out on the road to tackle what might be coming our way. With the opening of our 2 new salt storage barns, we have plenty of salt to spread on Hampshire's major road network should we experience a prolonged dip in temperatures. Our priority is to keep Hampshire moving."
Event celebrates end of summer. The farmers who make the best of country life gathered in the heart of Winchester last weekend to celebrate Hampshire agriculture. The Harvest Festival at Winchester Cathedral brought families together to mark the end of a difficult summer for many farmers. And city dwellers got a feel for this summer's huge country shows, exploring more than 20 stalls and attractions with fresh produce, livestock and vintage machinery. The close was swarming with youngsters who enjoyed falconry demonstrations, horse-drawn carriages and learnt how food gets to their plates. Education and outreach is a key part of city events for the many rural organisations who set up shop. Ben Robinson, chairman of Hampshire Federation of Young Farmers, said, "It's a fantastic event and fantastic opportunity for everyone involved in the Hampshire farming community to come together and show what we do to the wider public. The Cathedral prides itself on the event's interactivity, particularly through the Scarecrow competition, which sees visitors craft their own straw people. The Cathedral's County Harvest Service on Sunday afternoon saw TV's Alistair Stewart interviewing figures from the agricultural community. Before the service, the Dean of Winchester and guest speaker Simon Robinson of Hattingley Wine hosted lunch in the Cathedral refectory.
President appointed to Friends. The Friends of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Charity in Winchester is delighted to announce that former chairman of Winchester and Eastleigh NHS Trust, Vice Admiral Mike Gretton, has agreed to become the honorary president of the Friends. Vice Admiral Gretton filled the role of Trust Chairman for over 5 years, between 2007 and 2012, before the establishment of the current Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, and is very familiar with the workings and people involved in running the RHCH. He said, "I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to advise and help the RHCH Friends in their vital role of supporting Hampshire patient care and comfort in the Winchester Hospital. I look forward to helping identify new ways of providing assistance and encouraging liaison with the hospital management, both at Winchester and at the other trust hospitals in Andover and Basingstoke. The RHCH Friends have raised over £2 million with the help of the local community since its foundation in 1955 and is celebrating its Diamond Jubilee this year. The 60th anniversary dinner is being held on Friday, November the 13th at St John's House in Winchester."
Bikers back from worldwide ride. He's been through Russia, America and the depths of Mongolia on a round-the-world bike ride. But it was Heathrow Customs which scuppered this motorcyclist's Hampshire homecoming. Duncan Gale rode home to Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy, a day late after his four-month trek was halted by customs trouble. The 48-year-old yacht captain took on the challenge to win a 10-euro bet with his girlfriend, Ellen de Jong. Riding thousands of miles across Europe, through Russia, China, Mongolia, South Korea, Canada, and the US, Duncan said his only preparation was cleaning the bike and arranging visas. And there's a photograph of the Duncan Gale sitting on his motorbike, looking perhaps a little windblown, but very, very cheerful after his successful ride.
Man pleads guilty. A Winchester man who attacked a woman must go on a Building Better Relationships course for 32 days. Benjamin Davis, 35, of Vale Road, Highcliffe, admitted assaulting Krishaw Shaw on June the 30th. He also pleaded guilty to harassing Miss Shaw on social media between June the 22nd and July the 11th. Magistrates in Basingstoke sentenced him to a community order with the requirement for the 32-day course. They also imposed a restraining order to stop him contacting Ms. Shaw and told him to pay a £60 victim surcharge, £25 costs and a £150 criminal courts charge.
MP visits Wellbeing Centre. MP Steve Bryan dropped into the Winchester Wellbeing Centre to discuss current and future mental health services. Following a pre-election meeting in Westminster with the mental health charity Mind, at which Mr. Bryan agreed to support their Mind Manifesto, he met the team from charity Solent Mind. The service is commissioned by Hampshire County Council to provide services including peer support, one-to-one appointments and numerous group sessions from a base in Parchment Street. The Winchester and Chalmersford MP met Elizabeth White Ripley, Head of Wellbeing, and Chief Executive Richard Barrett. Mr. Bryan said he was keen to learn about Solent Mind and how recent government policy in mental health is impacting on the ground. They also discussed the recently signed Mental Health Care Crisis Concordat, which is an agreement between services. Miss White Ripley said, "We were delighted to welcome Steve to Winchester Wellbeing Centre and to show him how we're supporting people with mental health problems." Mr. Bryan said, "At the Department of Health, we are resolutely focused on making good our commitments in mental health policy and funding. For the first time, mental health has parity with physical disorders, and we have the first ever waiting times to guarantee treatment."
Timber! Tree blocks road. A chunk of 40-foot chestnut tree crashed down close to Winchester Leisure Centre and a school. The boughs fell in Gordon Road near the Colour Factory, River Park Leisure Centre and St Bede School. Debris blocked the pavement and covered two-thirds of the road. One person who saw the aftermath was Ian Henderson from Badger Farm, former Chronicle sports editor, who had been working out in the Leisure Centre gym. Mr. Henderson said, "I didn't see it fall, but a man at the Leisure Centre said there was quite a bang when it went down. It would have definitely killed someone if it had hit them." A tree surgeon at Worthy Tree Care said, "It was right across the whole road, blocking it, and you could just about get one car through. It's one of those things. It can happen any time, anywhere. It could be because of a crosswind, or weight, or because of anything. Who knows?" He added that there was about 1.5 tons of debris to clear, which took around 3 hours to clear. The incident happened at 2 p.m. last Wednesday.
Confusion around pub's closure. Mystery surrounds the closure of a Winchester pub. The William Walker on the corner of the Square and Market Street has been shut for nearly 2 weeks. The pub is owned by Fuller's Brewery and was run by Colin Clark, who used to run Alfie's in the Broadway until a year ago and also runs the Exchange in Southgate Street. Mr. Clark said he would not go into the reasons why the pub closed. He said, "It is closed until further notice. I have no idea what Fuller's are doing with it." A spokeswoman for Fuller's said the firm hopes to reopen the pub. She said, "We are aware of the situation at the William Walker and we are working with all the parties involved to get the pub open as soon as possible." The watering hole is named after diver William Walker, who from 1906 to 1911 worked for 6 hours a day in complete darkness to help builders construct walls for Winchester Cathedral when it was in danger of sinking into peat.
Plans for homes. Civic chiefs are pressing ahead with a £1.4 million plan for 9 new council homes in Alresford. The City Council wants to revamp land by a roundabout at Mitford Road, building 6 small flats and 2 semi-detached houses on a garage block. A 2-bedroom bungalow will be built nearby, while the grassed roundabout will become a new public open space. Residents have raised concerns over parking build-up, but officers said feedback from consultation was largely positive. The 1-bedroom flats are expected to be let for £114 a week, with the houses at £158 and the bungalow at £166. Planning application is set to be prepared after the project was approved by Cabinet Housing Committee last Wednesday.
Station proposals. A developer has reapplied for permission to redevelop Alresford Police Station. McCarthy and Stone Retirement Lifestyles Limited wants to demolish the 1970s building in Station Road and build a retirement complex for the over-55s. It involves the conversion of the listed station mill to form 4 flats and a new 3-storey building of 15 apartments.
Council houses. 24 council houses were sold in the Winchester district last year. according to a council report. The city council expects 16 to be sold off this year, 2015-16, and 12-16 a year in following years. The council has a policy to build 300 new council houses between 2012 and 2022.
Helping with type 2 diabetes. A conference for people with type 2 diabetes will be held next month. Southern Health NHS Trust will be holding its second annual conference for diabetes sufferers on Saturday, November the 14th, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The conference at Wells Place Centre, Eastleigh, will help people understand the effects of type 2 diabetes. People will be able to take part in exercise tasters, listen to patient stories, visit stalls, and talk to healthcare professionals. To book, you can call 023 8028 6360. That is 023 8028 6360.
Elderly tea event. Winchester Cathedral is holding a tea at 3 for the elderly. The gatherings are held on the third Monday of the month for older people and those living alone. It's held in the Undercroft at 10A Inner Close. The cost for the tea is £2.50. And the next one will be on October the 19th and then November the 16th, with none in December.
Final stop for devoted transport enthusiast. A railway and bus enthusiast, saviour of Hockley Viaduct, local historian, Chris Webb was all of these and much more. This delightful man, who died on September the 26th, aged 76, will be remembered by his many friends with great affection. His kindness and generosity abounded. He was born in December 1938 at Fareham, but later moved to Newbury. After national service in the 1950s, he worked for British Rail before transferring to British Gas. In the early 1970s, he moved to Winchester, his home for the next 40 years. Ask Chris about his main interests in life, and he would reply without hesitation, "The two most important forms of transport on this planet, rail and bus." He travelled to many parts of the world on the railways of Australia, the USA, Canada, and even on the world's highest railway in the Himalayas. His knowledge of all rail routes of this country and restored steam branch lines was immense. This also applied to various bus companies who operate not only in Britain but also abroad. And, of course, vintage buses were his speciality. He travelled as much as possible by bus, although he owned a car. Naturally, when the Friends of King Alfred Buses was formed in 1985, Chris soon got involved, and for many years he could be found, on their running days, sitting at his information desk in the Guildhall, guiding visitors in the right direction for their bus tour. Chris of Southgate Street was also a prominent member of the City of Winchester Trust, and in its early days helped to set up exhibitions, displays and video presentations for public viewing in the Heritage Centre. There were other organisations he was associated with, including the Winchester Residents Association. But perhaps of all his interests, the saving of the Hockley Viaduct took priority. Threatened with demolition in the early 1970s, Chris immediately set up an action group to save the unique structure. 40 years later, on February the 28th, 2013, his dream came true when the viaduct was officially opened to the public. Unfortunately, he wasn't well enough to attend the ceremony. There are so many campaigns Chris had been involved with over the years. Two come to mind. The restoring of the red telephone box in St Thomas Passage near his home, and the replacement of the headless Black Swan above the Black Swan buildings, and the plaque on the wall stating that Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson stayed at the Black Swan Hotel originally on the site. It took Chris 6 years to accomplish his wish. 3 D's sum up his life. Delightful, dedicated, determined. He was a true friend to us all.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.